It's Tuesday, November 17th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, authorities search for suspects connected with the Paris attacks. Concerns, too, in the United States. We'll check in at the Pentagon. Also ahead, Hillary Clinton has a new strategy to become president. And Alanis Morissette makes something new from something old. It's all coming up on today's International Edition. French authorities detained 23 people in police raids across the country, and officials say they have identified the suspected mastermind behind the deadly assault in Paris. A Belgian national of Moroccan descent, Abdelhamid Aboud, was named as the possible lead plotter of the attacks that killed at least 129 people. Belgian authorities had sought him earlier this year for a foiled terror attack on police. Meanwhile, in Paris, the streets are calm amid a continued period of mourning. VOA correspondent Daniel Sheriff joins us with more. Daniel, you're near the main gathering point, the Place de la République, and what's the atmosphere there?
Well, in this neighborhood, it's fairly quiet as far as any type of manhunt going on. There's nothing obvious that's going on from what I can see. I mean, we do have a lot of sirens on a fairly regular basis as ambulances and police cars come through this area. Presumably they're doing something. We do have a lot of people who are visiting the square here, the Place de la République, to show their respects and to leave messages of support for victims and their families and for Paris and for the country. So there is a large presence of people here and a larger police and security presence than we had earlier on the weekend. The areas where the terrorist attacks took place are still roped off, and they do have security there. People are visiting those areas and laying flowers at the barriers, also, again, to show respect and support.
You're coming to the end of a mourning period in Paris, and presumably things are going to start to open up again.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's surprising, but, it was fairly quick to see some aspects of Parisian life returning to somewhat of a normality fairly quickly, even in the neighborhood here where a lot of the attacks took place. There are still cafes that were open. People were still going to restaurants and bars and going about their daily business, walking dogs and so forth. So there's certainly a sense that, although this has hit the city pretty hard, obviously it's the worst terrorist attack, the worst attack that's occurred here since World War II. But people are resilient. They're also not wanting to give up their daily activities and cower in fear because that's what the terrorists want to see. Of course, on the wider scale, it's also an issue of policy and forcing policy changes in a country that they may not want to actually see happen. If there are any tightening on civil liberties or, if we start to see some pullback of French forces from the Middle East, then also the terrorists would be winning in their objective. But we've seen just the opposite, which is France stepped up its attacks on the Islamic State and vowed to fight what President Hollande called a war.
Daniel, how about on the political end? I understand Secretary of State John Kerry has arrived in Paris, and President Obama has made some comments, as well as the French president.
I'm sure we're going to see some strong shows of support from the U.S. Secretary of State when he meets with French officials tomorrow morning. Of course, the U.S. Has come out very strongly. We saw President Obama making some very strong statements out of Turkey. And the French President Hollande today had some very tough talk. There's also some discussion of potentially changing the constitution of France in order to deal more strongly with the issue of terrorism. It's not exactly clear what that might entail, but certainly it's going to be something that French people will be discussing in some detail. President Hollande, in his speech today to Congress, also said that he would be meeting with President Obama in the coming days, as well as President Putin of Russia. Putin has been pushing for, you know, a big alliance against the Islamic State and other terrorists in the Middle East as part of his strategy in Syria, the Middle East, and getting back onto the world stage. That's something that's been resisted by the U.S. because of Putin's relationship with the Syrian president, Bashar al-Assad, and not wanting to end up on the side of someone who's been using barrel bombs against civilian areas. So it's a very sensitive political time. It's going to be very interesting to see how these talks and discussions between the president of France, the U.S. president, and later when he meets with President Putin in Russia, how all this turns out.
VOA correspondent Daniel Sharaf with us from Paris. Daniel, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
We turn to our social media segment to check out the U.S. government officials' response to the Paris attacks. International Edition's G. Abby Lee is here in Studio 22 with more. Hello, G.
Hi, Jim.
So, what's happening?
More than a dozen state governors announced they will close the doors to Syrian refugees. The decision is, of course, out of fear that violent extremists might enter their state while posing as refugees. So, let's hear from a few of them. Texas Governor Greg Abbott tweeted he sent a letter to President Obama. His tweet reads like this: "My letter to POTUS. Texas will not accept any Syrian refugees in the wake of the Paris attacks." He's on Twitter at GOV Abbott. Bobby Jindal, governor of Louisiana and one of the Republican presidential contenders, tweeted this: "I just signed an executive order instructing state agencies to take all available steps to stop the relocation of Syrian refugees to L.A. His handle is at Bobby Jindal. Governor of Ohio John Kasich tweeted, "The security of Americans must come first." He's on Twitter at John Kasich.
Well, it seems like that's mostly Republican governors. Is that right, G?
Exactly. Now, there is only one Democratic governor who supports stopping the flow of refugees in the U.S. That's Governor Maggie Hassan of New Hampshire. But she hasn't tweeted about it yet. So, to sum it up, governors of Illinois, Ohio, Florida, North Carolina, New Hampshire, Arizona, Indiana, Massachusetts, Louisiana, I'm not done yet, Michigan, Alabama, Texas, Georgia, and Arkansas are in support of not accepting refugees from Syria.
Wow, quite a list of states. Mm-hmm. And what is the White House's response?
President Obama doesn't support the governor's decisions and believes Washington should remain open to accepting the refugees. The White House shared a clip of POTUS speaking during the G20 summit in Turkey. President Obama said, "We do not close our hearts to these victims of such violence." He also said, "Slamming the door in their face would be a betrayal of our values." Now, while some people commented they're proud of his decision, one Twitter user wrote, "He is working awfully hard to place American lives in jeopardy on our home front." Jim, judging by the comments on Twitter, more people are critical of the president on this issue than not. Back to you.
Well, thanks for being here today. G. Abby Lee tweets for us on our VOA International Twitter account. You can follow us at VOA _IE, and you can also follow G on her very own account at G. Abby Lee. This is VOA.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This is VOA's International Edition. Islamic State militants have vowed to hit the United States after expanding their regional battle beyond Syria and Iraq into the greater Middle East and also the heart of Europe. Carla Babb is VOA's Pentagon correspondent, and she's with me here in Studio 22. Carla, there's heightened concern at the Pentagon as well.
Oh, yes. After the video came out from the Islamic State, a lot of people are worried, could this actually happen in Washington? And the answer is no one can know for certain, but everybody is on high alert, like you said, and people are trying to decide now, is President Obama's strategy the right one? Is he hitting the Islamic State hard enough? And as you heard him at the G20 today, he says, absolutely, the strategy is right. We're going to keep going with this strategy.
What are some of the elements of this strategy that President Obama has laid out?
President Obama wants to have more intelligence sharing with allies that includes France. There was an agreement signed between the United States and France. He's also been ramping up the airstrikes on the Islamic State. There have been hundreds over the past week, and they're focusing on different areas to help the allies on the ground. President Obama still believes that this is not the United States fight. He says that the United States could come in, clear the Islamic State out of Raqqa, but what good would that do? Who's going to be there to take over and rebuild? It has to be the people that are there on the ground. And so in the meantime, he's getting a lot of criticism from people saying that he's not doing enough. But the Pentagon is talking and pointing at the recent victories. They said there have been major victories in Al-Hol with the Syrian Arab coalition up in Syria, and then in Sinjar by the Kurdish Peshmerga, which has been helped by Iraqi security forces in the air in Iraq.
Well, certainly this is going to be an ongoing campaign. How about cooperation? Are they getting a lot of cooperation now from other countries?
Well, we asked at the Pentagon today, we asked about France, because the United States has only been releasing the coalition strikes, and they'll tell you the numbers that are the United States, but then they don't tell anybody else's. So we were curious if France had been the number two contributor. They said they wouldn't say that, but they said that France is an important ally. And as you could see with the increased airstrikes that they did in Raqqa, they're going to be stepping in more and more into the fight.
Carla Babb reports for us from the Pentagon. Carla, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
And you can follow her on Twitter at Carla Babb, VOA. Well, Hillary Clinton continues to dominate the Democratic race for that party's presidential nomination. They just had a big debate, and Mrs. Clinton has been running a bit of a different campaign than she did back in 2008 when she lost to eventual President Barack Obama. Newsweek political correspondent Nina Burley joins us to tell us more about her strategy now.
Well, you know, in 2008, when she ran against Obama in the primary, her advisors suggested that she not play up the gender. She was trying to present this kind of resolute toughness, maybe more masculine side, and it kind of backfired. What's happening now is, from the day she announced her candidacy, she has played up her gender. She said, I may not be the youngest candidate for president, but I will be the youngest woman president. And cheers and roars of approval in the crowd. And ever since then, she's been playing up her mother's story, her position as a grandmother. She talks a lot about pay equity. She never misses a chance to bring up the woman angle, and you saw it in the debate the other night.
I understand Mrs. Clinton apparently is doing better among younger women as opposed to women who are in her age group, more like her in her demographic category.
There's a reason why you would want to play to the women's vote, and that is, first of all, in this coming election, millennials are going to outnumber boomers for the first time. And the pollsters are finding that younger women respond more to the first president transformational candidate kind of message. Younger women, boomer women, are much more likely to be kind of suspicious of her. They remember too much about the Clinton years and the scandals. And women in my age cohort are a little bit more uncomfortable with the whole infidelity thing and the marriage, and they just remember too much about the way things played out. Younger women, much more supportive, much more excited by the first female president concept.
And beyond the age split among women, how about the other demographics?
The other subgroup that's going to be really important in the general election is unmarried women under the age of 55. And that group also is much more pro-Clinton They are economically more on their own, and they respond more to the message. Interestingly, the group of women who are least likely to like Clinton in the polls that are being done now are the ones that are the most like her: older, wealthier, and married, and white. African-American women, women of color, are her, some of her strongest supporters. And again, the polling shows that they're not as affected as the older white women are by the Clinton scandal years.
It's an interesting demographic, and the way that she is going about her campaign versus 2008. So often, because it is a male-dominated race, we ask, well, how are these candidates doing among the women? Will Hillary have the ability to kind of take that out from underneath the other candidates?
Well, she sure is trying for that. She sure is trying, yes. And I think they're banking on the idea that she will be able to pull enough women in on this transformative candidate concept, whereas, you know, Obama was so transformative as the first African-American president. She is going to play up her position as a very transformative candidate and the first female president. Women will, they believe, respond to that, especially these subgroups of women that are going to be so crucial in the general election.
It's great insight into the Clinton campaign. Nina Burley covers politics for Newsweek. Thank you so much for joining us today.
You're absolutely welcome. Take care.
You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Hi, I'm Larry London, and I'm the host of Border Crossings, inviting you to join me for one of the best hours of request music possible on the radio. We've got all your favorite songs by your favorite singers. You tell us what to play. It's requests and dedications, and it happens every weekday right here on The Voice of America.
News happens around the clock. And VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
Her music defined the sound of a generation in the mid-1990s. You recognize her as Canadian-born singer and artist Alanis Morissette. She's reissued her groundbreaking CD, Jagged Little Pill, and as International Edition's David Berg reports, the collector's edition includes 10 unreleased songs from the same era.
Alanis Morissette was only 19 years old when her third CD, Jagged Little Pill, exploded on the music scene in 1995. The Canadian-born singer-songwriter's first single, You Oughta Know, encapsulated many of the emotions she and other young women were feeling at the time. Morissette says that the song, which earned her the reputation of being an angry songwriter, was a reaction to a life of trying to please others, and then finally being able to express her true self.
Because You Oughta Know came out of the gate first, I think that was a label that stuck. And, you know, I'll take it. As a woman and as a feminist at the time and still now, if there were to be one horrifying label that's going to be stuck onto me, I'll take angry, because it's so lovely. It's such a powerful force. Not the destructive version, but the one that inspires action. I'll take it.
It's like rain.
Morissette and co-writer Glenn Ballard came up with many of the songs in Ballard's studio in Encino, California. The two would write music together, and Morissette would write the lyrics.
now 41 years old, with a husband and a young son. Alanis Morissette says that time seems like just a few days ago.
It's definitely a different lifetime, though, for me. And yet there is this thread of continuity that's remained the same since when I was 2 years old, 19 years old. Now there's this sameness.
I'm high, but I'm grounded. I'm sane, but I'm overwhelmed. I'm lost, but I'm hopeful, baby.
Jagged Little Pill earned Morissette 4 Grammy Awards and has sold more than 33 million copies. Now the singer has her own monthly podcast called Conversations with Alanis Morissette. She says the podcast, which features conversations with authors, doctors, educators, scientists, and artists, is a natural outgrowth of her life. And what about music? Well, Alanis says she has a plan for a new album, but she wants to finish her book first.
I'm always writing songs, so I have about 15 new songs, and I had promised myself for a long time to finish this book that I'm writing, so it's holding the music hostage in the sweetest way. So I'll finish this book, I'm almost done, and then the second I'm done, I'll give myself probably 2 days off, and then I'll start writing again.
Alanis Morissette's Jagged Little Pill, the collector's edition, is available now. I'm David Byrd in Washington.
You've been listening to International Edition. Stop by our website at voanews.com to hear our programs in the future or download some past ones if you like. You can also follow us on Twitter, our handle at @VOA_IE. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Aydin Utku. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're all in Washington. We hope you have a great day. Thanks for joining us, and come back again.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The American people stand in solidarity with the people of France in the wake of the recent and tragic terror attack in Paris. 129 people were killed in a string of coordinated assaults across the city Friday evening. U.S. President Barack Obama called the attacks an outrageous attempt to terrorize innocent civilians.
This is an attack not just on Paris. It's an attack not just on the people of France, but this is an attack on all of humanity and the universal values that we share.
U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry echoed the president's remarks, noting these are heinous, evil, vile acts. Those of us who can must do everything in our power to fight back against what can only be considered an assault on our common humanity. France is our oldest ally, said President Obama. The French people have stood shoulder to shoulder with the United States time and again. President Obama noted that the American people draw strength from the French people's commitment to life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness.
Now, we want to be very clear that we stand together with them in the fight against terrorism and extremism. We're going to do whatever it takes to work with the French people and with nations around the world to bring these terrorists to justice and to go after any terrorist networks that go after our people.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237 USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.